Welcome to the Back in Time podcast with Kyle and JD, where every week we jump into our DeLorean, cruise to 88 miles per hour, and travel back in time to review our favorite films. Every week we talk about current cinema, the latest trailers, and we pick a new favorite film every single episode.
But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts!
Don't say that! Never say that! Goonies never say die!
You're the best! We're the beautiful! We're the only!
Now, here's your host, Kyle Autry, and his co-host, JD.
Welcome back to the Back in Time podcast. I am your host, Kyle Autry, joined as always by my esteemed co-host, JD. JD, how are you, sir?
Top of the morning to you, good sir.
Well, that was horrible.
Thank you.
What kind of accent was that? Are you British?
Yeah, it's called None of Your Damn Business.
That sounds new. Was that French?
It's a new country. It was just invaded by Shut the Damn Up.
Les incompetents. No? Yeah, man. Looking forward to diving in the Saw 2. We'll get back to that in a few minutes, but I want to thank you guys for hitting the download button on today's podcast. Remember, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, YouTube, and pretty much anywhere else you listen to podcasts. If you hit the subscribe button and turn on your notifications on YouTube, that'll make sure that you never miss an episode, and that is the best way to help support the show. So, JD, before we dive into Saw 2, let's saw back in the last week where we talked about E.T. the Extraterrestrial. What'd you hear about the E.T. episode?
People love E.T., man. I'll take that back. There's a lot of people that love E.T. and had a great time with the episode that we did. But a lot of people that I talked to kind of said that E.T. wasn't on their radar as kids. So it was a good opportunity for them to sort of see what all the hubbub is about for a first time.
The hubbub?
Hubbub?
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was a really good episode. I had fun doing it. I think it's one of those movies that if you watch every couple years, like I do, it can be a really good time. If you don't absolutely love the movie, it probably can feel a little bit dated. And I can see the argument on both sides. But if you want to check out that episode, maybe you're new to the podcast because we tend to pick up steam in October because we get a lot of horror fans that jump on. They're like, oh, gee, I wonder what else they have. We have everything. Comedy. We've done sports movies. Mighty Ducks. Done, you know, pretty much everything. JD, Give our new listeners a little insight into how this show works.
If it happened in the 80s or the 90s, it's on our radar. Movies that we grew up with, movies that we've forgotten about. It's all about revisiting those things and seeing, do they hold up? Is something from 1984 still worth water? And a lot of times they are. And we'll find a gem like Super Mario Brothers in our archives. A lot of times they're stinkers and we just will not have any fun like Suburban Commando.
Oh, gosh.
Well, you know something, brother. We were under a tight budget, dude.
Well, I don't know if I can agree with Hulk, but yeah, that was a tough episode to get through, for sure. That might be our worst. Do you think that's our worst episode? Or, I don't know. I had fun with Biodome, because we had your buddy Eric on. But I feel like if it would have been me and you on Biodome, that would have been a real stink fest.
And that's why we bring in guest stars. They have to fill in a lot of gaps for times when we watch a movie that one of us may not have liked, the other might have been fond of. Yeah, because that would have been a disaster of an episode.
Yeah, one thing I would like, I actually put up a clip today, probably about 6 minutes long, previewing season 2 of Making a Murderer. I know I've ranted and raved about making you watch the show, and I know you haven't yet on Netflix. So if we have any listeners out there that are huge Making a Murderer fans, hit me up on the Twitter, let me know, and I'd like to get you on for an episode, because I want somebody to go back and forth with that loves this show, because it's probably my favorite series that Netflix has ever done. And that's saying a lot, because I love Stranger Things, but I like Making a Murderer even more. There you have it. So check out that clip that's up right now. It got posted today. Now, I don't really have anything laid out. I felt like when we put those sections in a couple months ago, like the coming down the pipeline and the oh wow moments, like it felt like we were putting too much work into it. I think I just want to shoot from the old hip. How do you feel about that, JD?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Okay. So here's something I was going to text you over the weekend. And I guess I had never really heard of this guy, but it's a football player. His name is Patrick Mahomes. He's the starting quarterback for the Chiefs. Have you ever heard this guy?
No, I surprisingly have not.
Okay. So he's lighting the league on fire. That's not why I'm bringing him up. I want to play this short little clip, and I want to get some feedback on what you think he sounds like. You ready for this?
Let's do it.
I've heard it since I was in like seventh grade. So, but it's something that I've kind of embraced. And the guys, Kelsey, Tyreek, and those guys throw some shots at me, but don't worry, I throw shots back.
Well, he's got a unique.
How would you describe that voice?
Annoying.
A little froggy, would you say?
A little froggy, yeah. Froggy is a good way.
He sounds so much like Kermit the he's like, yeah, you know. He just.
You think it's Kermit?
I think it's Kermit. I think it's got a lot of Kermit in there.
Have you seen that the one episode of Family Guy where they have Harold Ramis, Ray Romano, and Kermit the Frog all having a conversation?
Yeah.
Hey, it's your turn to go ahead and talk. I didn't say that. Why'd you say that? I'm not talking right now. It's you that's talking.
Now, would it surprise you if I told you in hashtag no racist that this was a 6'4" black man?
Ooh, I'm glad you hashtagged that.
Would that shock you if that voice came out of that man?
Yeah, I would not have picked that out of the barrel.
Yeah, just a good old boy, country boy. Not at all.
Not him.
No. So what's going on with you, man? Anything cool? Did you see any movies lately?
Let's see. The last movie I saw was Predator.
Okay.
Or the Predator, Predators, whatever the heck they're calling it.
We got your feedback. It was not good.
Hey, have you seen it yet?
I have not.
Is it based off of my feedback?
It is. Yeah, you ruined it for me.
I'll tell you what. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think that's why I haven't watched Venom yet. I've heard so much negative feedback on that.
I'll tell you what I am excited for. You ready for this?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Bad Times at the El Royale.
Okay, that looks really good.
I'm super excited for that.
When's that come out? Is that next weekend?
I think it's this coming weekend. So when our audience is listening to this episode, they can go catch Bad Times at the El Royale with Donnie Draper.
It's got a really good cast. I know watching that, the trailer for that, I was like, whoa, this thing is loaded. John Hamm, Chris Hemsworth, Dakota Johnson, Jeff Bridges, Nick Offerman. I mean, just a slew of people. I'm not real familiar with Drew Goddard. I know he directed The Martian. What else did he do? Okay, he wrote The Cabin in the Woods. That wasn't bad. Directed or produced some episodes of Lost. Could be a nice little launching career for his directing.
Yeah, he wrote Cloverfield, and you mentioned Cabin in the Woods, World War Z. He's got some great credits under his belt. Cut his teeth with Buffy and Angel and Alias.
There you go. Yeah, that is a movie that I do want to see. Am I going to run out to the theaters to see it? No, I don't think I am. I do want to see A Star is Born. I like music, and I like movies about music. Not the biggest Lady Gaga fan, but she looks really good in this.
She actually does. I think she's going to be a fine addition to the film.
Sounds good. Sounds good. The other thing that I want to see is First Man. I'm a sucker for space movies, dude. I don't know what it is. I've watched Apollo 13 probably 15 times. Maybe 13 times. I don't know.
Hey-o.
Who's counting? But it's got Clint Howard in that. When are we going to get him on the show? Honestly.
It's either going to be, it has to be when we do Ice Cream Man.
Are we going to do Ice Cream Man? That's a thing?
I would say either when we do Ice Cream Man or when we do that thing you do.
Okay. What's he doing that thing you do?
He plays a radio DJ.
Oh, I like it. Is that a big enough movie, though, for him to come on and want to talk about it? Because that's like a bit part, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like 7 seconds of screen time.
He may take it, though. He might just take what he can get these days.
Well, we can do both and call it a deal.
Here we go. Awesome. Well, let's get into the reason we're here. Enough of the pleasantries. Let's dive into some Saw 2. So Saw 2 is a 2005 American horror film. It's a sequel to the 2004 Saw and the second installment in the Saw franchise. This one is directed and co-written by Darren Lynn Bozeman and series creator Lee Wainwright. The film stars Donnie Wahlberg, Frankie G, Glenn Plummer, Beverly Mitchell, and Dina Meyer. It also stars Shawnee Smith and Tobin Bell, who are series regulars. The film features Jigsaw being apprehended by the police, but trapping the arresting officer in one of his own games while showing another game of eight people, including the officer's son, in progress on TV monitors at another location. This came on the heels of the financial success of the original Saw. A sequel was immediately greenlit. We talked about that way back in our archives last year, that I believe, if you go back and listen to that old episode, they greenlit the sequel the weekend that the movie came out because it did so well. Does that sound familiar, JD? I think I'm on the right track there.
Yeah, that definitely sounds right.
Excellent. And, you know, Wayno was able to come back and do some rewrites for the script, but this was not his original script idea. And the film was given a much larger budget than the original, which had about $1 million budget. This one came in at $4 million and spending over $2 million in marketing. It definitely paid off because they would gross over $88 million domestically, taking in almost $32 million opening weekend. And when the movie came out on DVD February 14th of 2016, or sorry, 2006, it sold more than 3 million units at the time. It was the fastest-selling theatrical DVD in Lionsgate history. JD, what do you think about that?
Yeah, that's a lot of Blumpkin right there.
A lot of Blumpkin. I mean, how much were those DVDs back in the... They were at least $19.99, right?
Yeah, those things were not cheap.
So take 3 million times 20 bucks, and I'm no genius here. We all know that. But that's
your calculator going off.
Hey, man, I was going to mute that out. What are you doing?
Calculating.
So that's $60 million in DVD sales in the first week. That's pretty freaking impressive right there. Yeah, if you want to hear more about the numbers and how it did with the critics and audience, you can check out all that stuff in our last episode, the teaser trailer breakdown. And that's where we take a deeper dive into the numbers and we listen to the original trailer. And that one's actually a really good trailer to listen to. Probably one of the better trailers we've done in a while, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that's a good episode to check out. Now, we're going to take a quick 2-minute break. We'll be back on the other side with a full review for Saw 2. See you in a minute.
But what are you doing, Doc?
I need fuel.
Hi, I'm Hope Madden.
And I'm George Wolf.
And we are Mad Wolf of the Fright Club podcast.
And we are thrilled to join the Back in Time podcast and the rest of the gang with a look at one of the Universal Monster sequels.
Join us next week for a really close look at one of our favorites, The Bride of Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And we're back from the bathroom break, ready to jump into the full episode here. So we begin with a shot of a light bulb illuminating, and we will come to find out this guy's name is Michael. He turns a mirror to find his head is inside a head trap, and the TV turns on, and we've got our first clip of Jigsaw here. Let's take a listen.
So far, in what could loosely be called your life, you've made a living watching. hurting others. Society would call you an informant, a rat, a snitch. I call you unworthy of the body you possess, of the life that you've been given. Now we will see if you are willing to look inward rather than outward, to give up the one thing you rely on in order to go on living. The device around your neck is a death mask. The mask is on a spring timer. If you do not locate the key in time, the mask will close. Think of it like a Venus flytrap.
JD, what do you think of this opening?
Classic Jigsaw, isn't it? Like, I like the way that we jump right from where we were in the last movie to capturing all of the intensity and putting this fine, strapping young man in some weird-ass Victorian face mask trap.
Yeah, I believe it's called a... Well, they call it a death mask or a Venus flytrap. Something along that. I could be wrong on the Venus part.
It's messed the F up. That's what it is.
Penis flytrap? I don't know. Maybe I couldn't hear him right. Either way, it's a really scary trap that he's got on his head. And I really like the way that this scene was shot. It really comes off as like really frantic. There's a lot of quick cuts. There's different angles. And of course, we know how this one's going to end. The death trap going off and completely smashing his face as he falls to the ground and blood pours out. And then we have our title screen and Saw 2 pops up. JD, what do you think of the opening scene in comparison to the original, which was kind of like a slow burn?
Yeah, you know, we've talked about sequels so many times over and over and the struggle that the sequel has to stay true to the original, but to up the ante. And I think this is a fine opening scene to do that, to ride the rails of what the first one established and say, let's get messed up. Let's get weird real quick.
Are you at all disappointed that they did not maybe rehash the first film at the beginning and maybe figure out what happened to Dr. Gordon?
You know what? I'm going to say no, I'm not disappointed in that. And that's because I know what the upcoming films in the series do.
Yeah.
So I know that there's much more to come and what much more to be covered.
Okay. We meet Lieutenant Eric Matthews next. He's played by Donnie Wahlberg. Donnie, of course, is the older brother of Mark Wahlberg and was the founding member of New Kids on the Block. JD, what's your favorite Donnie Wahlberg movie, or do you prefer the music?
Do I prefer his music? I prefer his hamburgers.
The hamburgers are pretty darn good. I had one in Vegas. I also had one in Boston. Very good hamburgers.
Did you like Boston? I've never been to Boston. The Bastion.
Boston was awesome. We caught a ball game, got some Wahlburgers, got the Wahlburger brew, pretty good beer as well. And I liked it. It was a nice little town. Everything's like what cobblestone, I think they have, or brick. You just kind of walk up and down the streets. It's not super crowded. I mean, we were there for a baseball game that was sold out and it didn't feel crowded. Also, if you're ever going to go to a baseball game, they have the best setup. I wish new stadiums did this, but they have entrances all over the stadium. So you enter right where you're sitting. You basically walk in. Within 5 minutes, you're in your seat. You're sitting down. And when you leave, you're out of the stadium within 5 minutes. With a lot of stadiums, they have like maybe 3 or 4 entrances instead of like 40. And it takes forever to get in and out. And it's just a pain in the ass. Not Boston. They know how to do it right. Shout out to them. Let's cut to Matthews, who enters the police precinct to pick up his son, Daniel. He doesn't seem all that mad that Daniel was caught stealing, and I found that a little strange. They go outside, they argue back and forth, and Daniel says he wants to go back to his mom's house early, so it's safe to assume that his parents are divorced. And then later that night, we see Matthews calling his son, and he leaves a message apologizing for how they left things and saying, well, you know, I haven't heard from you in about a day or so, so just, you know, give me a call back. He's getting a little worried, but he's not saying he's worried yet. What do you think of that scene with young Daniel?
I don't know. It seems so out of place. I hate when the Saw movies try to just shoehorn in plot development points and try to, like, force us to relate to the characters, and she's like, let's just get to the room, guys. Let's get to the traps.
Matthews is meeting up with Detective Carrie next, played by Dina Mayer. She fills him in on what's been going on, and we found out Michael was Matthews' informant. Matthews says, well, let me get a look at him, and I'll ID him here in a quick minute. Carrie says, oh, well, that's the problem. We come on in here. So he goes over and he sees the body, and obviously the face is covered with the contraption. And he says, yeah, you know, that's him. And then he wants to know when she was going to mention the jigsaw piece that's on his shoulder. Right when he's ready to leave, she says, look closer, Detective Matthews, and then looks up at the ceiling, where we see that that phrase has been written on the ceiling towards him. So back at the precinct, Matthew storms into Carrie's office, slams his gun down on the table, and tells her never to pull that shit on me at a crime scene ever again. Carrie says she's not one for taunting, or she's not the one taunting him, he is. Matthew says he has enough on his plate now, he doesn't need to worry about other psychos calling him out, it's not the first time it's happened. And he tells her that they aren't partners anymore. She pleads with him to come on to the case. She needs him. But again, he turns her down. And she storms out and says, when did you stop becoming a cop? JD, from a writing standpoint, do you like this? Do you not like this? What do you think of this scene?
It's hard to take like these kind of cornerstone type of characters that they write themselves. There's not much development to them. Everybody knows the cop trope, and they play every single one of them in this. Not that I don't like it. I think that it's appropriate for the movie, but they make it so over the top that it's so difficult to relate.
Later that night, Matthews has a flashback or a dream, and he sees Wilson Steele in his dream. So we cut back to the precinct, where they've gathered a SWAT team, and they're planning to break into Wilson Steele and take it down. They plan on going during the day, so maybe it'll be unexpected. Carrie looks at Matthews and said, I thought you had enough of your caseload. I'm just tagging along for the ride. So they arrive at the Wilson Steel building. They enter. The jigsaw doll comes wheeling out, starts his little starts laughing, and then the cage door shuts behind them. One of the officers' legs gets broken off on the steps, pretty gruesome. And then they find out the fence is also electrocuting them as they reach for that. The rest of the cops pile into the building, and then they eventually get up the stairs, and the guy that broke his leg is just screaming bloody murder, but nobody seems to care about him, which I found funny. And they go right past him up the rest of the stairs, and they find Jigsaw sitting at a table with a black robe and a hoodie over his head. He's told to get on the ground, but he says he's afraid he can't do that. And we see that he's hooked up to some type of IV, and he's got a monitor on. Clearly, he's not in good health. They read him his rights, and Matthews comes over the Jigsaw and says, is this close enough? Jigsaw tells the officers he will need to remain here while they deal with their little problem. They rush into the other room where the officers find monitors set up. Let's listen in as Matthews talks to Jigsaw.
Let's go, my son.
What the fuck is that?
Hey, what the fuck is that?
It's your son, Daniel. You remember him, don't you?
God, no, please, you piece of shit. What is he doing on that fucking monitor?
Well, I haven't looked at the monitors for some time, so it would be hard for me to say. But I would imagine that he's cowering in a corner with a look on his face.
What? No, where is he? You motherfucker, where is he? Where is he?
Where is he? That's a problem you're going to have to solve before it's too late. He has about 2 hours. Before the gas creeping into his nervous system begins to break down his body tissue, and he begins to bleed from every orifice he has. Oh, yes. There will be blood.
JD, what'd you think of this scene?
I think that we're continuing to play up on these tropes, aren't we?
There's a lot of them, yep.
I don't know. First of all, Matthews, his name is Eric Matthews, and there's no relation to Boy Meets World for some reason.
Nice.
But I don't know, like, I feel that Jigsaw needs to be established enough as a prominent menace to society that you have to know he's up to something. Like, his nickname is Jigsaw, as in puzzle, as in he's playing a game with you right now. Somebody needs to be level-headed enough to be like, hey, dude, go with the flow here.
Okay, well, Dina kind of does that, right? Well, I call her by her real name. Carrie is like that, right?
Yeah, but she's so, like, she's so plays second fiddle to, like, she doesn't have authority over the situation. She just comments on what she sees.
Right. They give her more authority in the sequel. No spoilers. But yeah, I agree. Matthews tries to call Daniel's phone, trying to make sure Jigsaw isn't lying to him. And this time the voice message picks up and it's Jigsaw's voice. And he says, "You've reached Daniel's phone. He's not available right now." The officers look at the monitors and then we cut to the inside of this house and we meet our new characters. JD, let's talk about them. We got a lot of different guys in here. We've got several ladies as well. What'd you think of the new characters and kind of how they all interact at the beginning here?
I thought it was a poor setup. Like, I don't feel like we get enough time with the characters to know or understand who they are. Outside of just seeing we've got a tough guy, we've got a black guy, we've got a skanky girl, we've got a nervous girl, we've got a nervous guy, we've got a guy in a suit, and we've got a kid. Am I missing anyone?
Nope, I think you got them all. Oh, yeah, no, we've got the druggie with the needle marks, and she hasn't woken up yet. But, yeah, she will.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, God. Oh.
Amanda.
I'll hold my comments until you start in on her.
The girl on the floor wakes up, pukes a little, and starts to freak out. She says her name is Amanda. Of course, this is the same Amanda from the first film. She starts freaking out and starts screaming, "No, no, no, no." She immediately starts searching around all over the place, and she finds what she's looking for. It's a tape player, and she tells Jonas that everything they need to know is on this tape. Let's listen in as Jigsaw explains why they're all there.
"Greetings, and welcome. I trust that you are all wondering where you are. I can assure you that while your location is not important, what these walls offer for you is important. Salvation, if you earn it. 3 hours from now, the door to this house will open. Unfortunately, you only have 2 hours to live. Right now, you are breathing in a deadly nerve agent. You've been breathing it since you arrived here. Those of you familiar with the Tokyo subway attacks will know its devastating effects on the human body. The only way to overcome it and walk out that door is to find an antidote. Several are hidden around this house. One is inside the safe in front of you. You all possess the combination to the safe. Thank God. The numbers are in the back of your mind. The clue to their order can be found over the rainbow. Once you realize what you all have in common, you will gain a better understanding of why you're here. X marks the spot for that clue, so look carefully. Let the game begin."
JD, what'd you think of this?
Geez, Amanda.
In our archives, great episode. Can't hardly wait.
Rewatching it this time around, like, I saw the plot twist coming from a mile away.
Right.
It's just so obvious. Like, they don't even try to hide it. It's just, it's painful to me to see, like, the role that she plays in this. And then she's just, "Oh, guys, let's look over here. And I'm going to pretend like I'm scared. And I'm going to pretend like I know answers because I've done this before." And they never spent any time listening to what the tape says. Then they just go into full-on freak-out mode.
Yeah. And the first one to freak out is Chavez. And he pulls out a key and there's a note on it that says, "Do not attempt to use this key on the door." Chavez literally says, "Fuck that." And goes over to use the key on the door. Gus looks through the peephole. And as Chavez turns the key, it's boom, blows Gus's eye right out. He falls on the floor, and we've got our first kill scene in the house. JD, what'd you think of this contraption? I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a cool contraption, but I didn't even realize that the suit guy had a name.
It's Gus, yeah. Yeah, there's a couple characters that names are never mentioned, but yeah, luckily we've got IMDb.
Gus Bus? Am I right? What movie is that from?
I actually don't know.
Benchwarmers. Okay. You remember that movie?
It's been a long time, but I do.
Rob That's Schneider.
Got Rob Schneider. I actually had a friend of mine that I used to work with at the company I'm with now that was actually the body double for Rob Schneider. So every time he pitches, it's my buddy that pitches. And yeah, he ran into him at a resort a couple years back and they kind of reminisced. He's like, oh, thanks for making me look so good in bench warmers. He's like, buy me a drink. He's like, no, fuck off. And then left. So nice guy, I assume Rob Schneider is. I also like his comb overs. He gets clever with that hairdo.
Is he legit lacking up top?
Yeah, he's follically challenged. Yeah. Uh-huh. He does a good job of hiding it, though. Now, we cut back to Jonas, who wants answers from Amanda. She explains that the killer is Jigsaw and that we have to play by the rules. She says that she played the game once before. We cut back to Matthews, who is calmly asking Jigsaw what he wants from him. Jigsaw says, some of your time, but my condition is all the people have to leave. Matthew says, no way, this is a crime scene. This is not the building. They have to leave the area. And if you give me some of your time, then you're going to see your son again. Matthews tells Jigsaw that if he doesn't see his kid, he's going to rip his face off. And Jigsaw just says, I don't mean to mock you, but I'm a cancer patient. How could you possibly do something to me that would put me in any more pain? Matthews talks to the other cops. Carrie wants him to play along. She's the voice of reason. But the SWAT team guy, who's literally listed as SWAT team guy number one, wants to do this old style and beat the answers out of him. JD, what were your thoughts on the request from Jigsaw? And what do you think about the two theories, like play along or beat the hell out of him?
See, this is what I was saying earlier. There has to be a level where they need to have a dossier or something on Jigsaw where they're like, hey, he's going to mentally F with you. If you don't have the kind of resilience to go toe-to-toe with him, don't talk to him.
Right.
I mean, it's just, it's mind-boggling and it's so frustrating. And the screenwriters take so many assumptions in saying, well, he's just going to be angry and he's going to do what he wants. Literally, 10 or 20 people are just going to, like, fold their arms and be like, oh, it's cool. He's got this.
So we cut back to the house. The door opens up and Chavez quickly exits. So if they would have just waited a couple minutes, they would not have had the blown Gus's head off. He finds a bat against the wall. It's got some nails on it. Pretty gnarly. Jonas tries to be the voice of reason, but Chavez doesn't want to listen. In the hallway, Addison starts coughing up some blood. She's the one with the darker hair, not the blonde, but she says she's fine. They find a door that says exit, but they can't get the door open. Chavez throws the key down on the floor, and Jonas picks it up, puts it in his pocket. We cut back to Jigsaw and Matthews, and let's listen to their conversation here.
I want to play a game. Are simple. What you have to do is sit here and talk to me. Listen to me.
If you do that long enough, then you will find your son in a safe
and secure state. We haven't been properly introduced. My name's John.
How do you like to be called Jigsaw?
No. It was the police and the press who coined the nickname Jigsaw. I never encouraged or claimed that. The Jigsaw piece I cut for my subjects was only ever meant to be a symbol that subject was missing something. A vital piece of the human puzzle, the survival instinct.
This is all really, really interesting, John. Right now, I'd really like for you to talk to me.
I am talking to you. You are not listening. Don't forget the rules.
I'm listening to you.
JD, what were your thoughts on the details that we're getting from Jigsaw now?
Yeah, it's so interesting to see the way that Jigsaw and Matthews interact with one another, because Matthews just doesn't seem like he gives a damn. Like, he's got his eyes on the prize, and Jigsaw is literally telling him the answer, and Matthews just is oblivious. So I don't know, he's like in bloodlust mode or something here. He's only seeing red. It's, you know, you just want to jump through the screen and be like, listen, idiot.
Yeah, it's interesting because at the beginning is really calm. This part, he's getting a little bit more irritated. And then next time we get to him, he's going to be full on. We smash back to the group in the house. Chavez is smashing the door with the baseball bat, but as he gets through the wood, he finds out that it's just metal bars on the other side, and it's not really an exit. Addison says, so we've discovered the macho bullshit isn't going to work. Chavez and Addison argue back and forth. Jonas sees a tattoo on Addison's arm and then asks Chavez as well, so like, what prison are you from? Okay, which one are you from? What'd you serve time for? And then they're all like, well, what do you need to know all this for? Well, he mentions in the tape that we have more in common than we know. So as he's talking, Laura, who's the blonde, finds a trap door. She pulls it open. Chavez leads the way down into the basement. Everyone follows. And they think they found a body, but when they pull it back, it has a hoodie on. And it's just another mannequin. And they find a note that says, Obi? Jonas is like, what the fuck's an Obi? And then the creepy buzz cut guy who hasn't talked at all is like, Abby. He hasn't spoken yet. And he says, that's my name. Let's listen to the audio of Jigsaw telling Obi, or Abby, what to do.
Obi, I want to play a game. For years, you have burned those around you with your lies, cons, and deceits. Now you'll have a chance to redeem yourself for the games you've played with others by playing one of mine. Inside the device in front of you are two antidotes for the poison coursing through your veins. One is my gift to you for helping me kidnap the others. The second is yours to donate. However, one of them will come with a price. Remember, Orby, once you are in hell, only the devil can help you out.
Wait a minute. What does that mean?
JD? Did this surprise you at all? I didn't think that Jigsaw would kind of call him out. Like, they know right away he's in on it.
Yeah, but I'll say at the same time, Jigsaw pronounces his name incorrectly. He called him Obi over the tape.
Yeah.
So, just, you've got this guy, they say Obi, Abby. Then Jigsaw comes on the tape, Abby, or Obi, calls him the wrong name. Like,
everybody's messing it up.
It's so frustrating, like, to think, like, that they're in this situation and Obi-Abi, whatever you want to call him, Obi-Abi Kenobi. I don't know what I would do in this. I think that there's some logical progression to the character action and development because of this finding of information, and he wants to get out just the same way, but at the same time, like, nothing seems organic or authentic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that Jigsaw tape is enough to spur the memory of Laura, who speaks up, and she's like, he's the one that put us here. You're the last person I saw before I woke up here. And she's like, are you sure about this? She's like, oh, yeah, I'm definitely sure. Abby says...
Oh, how convenient.
Abby says he did what he has to do. And now he's got to go in there and get the serum and do what he has to do here. So Chavez threatens him and tells him he needs to get in there or he's dead. He puts a knife up Abby's neck and tells him he's going to go and get those needles. Abby, this is badass, by the way. He grabs Chavez's hand, presses it against his neck, and starts cutting. And then says, if you're going to threaten me with a knife, you better cut me with it. And then he just turns around and just goes right into the contraption. He gets the first needle. The second one he gets, he's like, they can fight over this one. But when he pulls it, it pulls a string, the door closes shut, some fire starts shooting up. Abby starts to burn alive on the wall. And I don't know if he ever saw this, but the camera cuts to it. It's a little devil pointing to a turn knob, and it says twist, but he never gets to it. I think that was water to put out the fire. Finally, they go to the other side, and they bust out a window with the bat. Abby tries to get out, but he can't, and he's burned alive. JD, what'd you think of this kill scene?
It's pretty brutal. It feels like he dies a little too prematurely, doesn't it? Like, he breaks out of the glass, and he's like, I'm all okay, and then...
yeah, one I'm minute, dead. he's like, yeah, it's really quick.
I almost feel like it's like a video game, and you can see his health meter just depleting, and then it's like, oh, okay, Avi's done.
And then I'd be like, start button. Oh, I stole one of your extra guys. Sorry, JD. Mean to.
Jerk.
Matthews and Jigsaw continue the talk back and forth. Matthews is becoming increasingly upset with the more they talk. He calls Jigsaw a murderer, in which Jigsaw refutes and says, I've never murdered anyone. Matthews tells him that putting a gun to someone's head and forcing them to pull the trigger is murder. Finally, Jigsaw asks, why are you only willing to care about your son when it's life or death? Jigsaw says, if I were to tell you the exact time and date of your death, it would shatter your world. We see a flashback of him at the doctor's office, and he enters a room, and on the outside it says Dr. Lawrence Gordon on the door. Jigsaw says he's not fixable, but you are. He admits that he tried to kill himself by driving his car off a cliff, and that's what started him in his work. He was determined to live out his final days testing the fabric of human nature. Matthews is barely paying attention, and he tells him that he has a chance to do something good right now. And Jigsaw tells him, those who don't appreciate life don't deserve life. Matthews says, ah, this is shit. He slams his fist down and walks out, and Jigsaw warns him to not forget the rules if you want to find your son. The timer says 54 minutes remaining. What'd you think of this scene, JD?
This is a really powerful scene, and go ahead and clarify to everybody, if you haven't seen the first one or haven't put it together, who is Dr. Gordon?
Dr. Gordon is Lawrence Gordon, who is the main character of the original. He is the one who is trapped by the ankle and spends the whole time trying to figure out why the heck he's there, and eventually has to saw off his own foot to then crawl to the door, and then we don't know what happens to him.
So I think that that's a great connection and a great payoff from the first film to the second film. Like, that's such a simple thing to do. It's not a fan service thing. It's just this big connecting tissue.
Yeah, and I like they come back to this over the sequels too. Like, they're going to go inside the room. We're going to see him talk to him for the first time. Like, there's more to this story, and I like that we get a little piece of it right here. So, back at the house, Laura is crouched down in the corner. She thinks this is the end. Daniel assures her that it isn't. Daniel asks Amanda why she was picked. She says she went from being a junkie to cutting herself. She walks away and says, maybe you should talk to the cop who arrested me and put me here. Or arrested me and put me in jail. Daniel almost slips up and says his dad's a cop, but he stops and says, my dad's a real hard ass. Jonas comes into the room and says he's found a door. So he said it's the only one without a lock, but we can't get it open. Addison is trying to pick the lock in the next scene here. Chavez pushes her out of the way, and he's finally able to push his way through the door, but it trips an alarm, and it starts counting down. There's a door inside. They've got 3 minutes. Jonas plays the tape. Let's take a listen here. JD, what'd you think of this?
This is actually like a super great scene. And it's so like morbid and so horrible to see the setup of what we've got. And I really feel like, you know, we can discuss the scene further after we get to the end of the movie about what Chavez does to Amanda. But like, this movie's filled with really great, disgusting traps.
Yeah. It really is. And as the tape is playing, Chavez pulls back the bed in there and reveals a whole bed full of needles. And then he goes over, grabs Amanda, and throws her into the pile of needles. She just starts screaming. We see that the clock is down to 45 seconds, so she frantically starts kind of swimming through the needles, looking for the key. She pulls it out, tosses it up. Chavez goes over to the door. He's got about maybe 7-8 seconds left. Dumbass drops the key. He goes to put it in. Timer goes off, and we find out that the door's locked. They're not going anywhere. We also find out that Laura has also spent some time in jail. That gets brought up right after this. So that's all four of them have been locked up. So Jonas says, how about you? You look like you got juvie ridden all over you. He's like, nope, never been in jail. What'd you think of this scene?
I think it's horrible. Like Chavez throwing her away into that pile of needles.
Yeah.
Like that really makes me cringe. But she just swims through it. She finds the key and Chavez just happens to drop it seconds before. It's like, that's the best they could come up with.
Yeah, that's pretty brutal. We cut to Detective Carrie, and she says that this is an opportunity for Jigsaw to be studied. So what we have to do is destroy his work. So she sends Matthews back in. He starts destroying his work, and Jigsaw badgers him while he's doing it. He's like, you're a crooked cop. You're divorced from your wife. You're a terrible father. And Matthews is about to leave when Jigsaw says, you can tell the people in the other room listening on the walkie-talkie to look in the second drawer. We cut to Carrie, and she pulls open the drawer, finds a folder, and it's revealed that all the people locked in the house with Daniel were arrested by Matthews. And not only did he arrest them, but he actually planted evidence on them to make sure that they went away. I thought that was that's pretty clever writing. I like that. What did you think?
Yeah, that's definitely a really solid hook.
We cut back to the house. Chavez is walking around with the bat. He's getting a little wobbly, though. Whatever they have in their system coursing through their veins is starting to get to him. We see Jonas outside the room. He kind of crouches over, starts spitting up some blood. Chavez has a flashback where Jigsaw says, you all possess the numbers to the safe. He finds the first number on the back of Gus's head, and it's part of the combination number that they need to unlock the safe. Jonas comes in and tries to get Chavez to just, you know, be cool, man. Everybody's scared of you. Just, you know, cooperate. And Chavez pulls out a knife and kind of goes after him. Jonas gets the best of him here. I mean, he actually knocks him down, kicks him in the face. But as Chavez is down, Jonas kind of turns around and starts coughing up blood again, which gives Chavez the chance to get back to his feet, grab the bat, and just plant that bat with nails right on Jonas's head. It makes the most disgusting sound. Whoever did the special effects, well done. As Jonas falls to the ground, you just see the bat sticking straight up in the air, and then Chavez goes over and gets the second combination number on the back of his head. We cut to the hallway where Daniel and all the ladies are walking. Laura's fallen on the ground. She's getting really weak. And she says, X marks the spot, and points to the wall. Addison sees the photo, and it's got the broken glass on it in the shape of an X. So she pulls the picture off the wall, and on the back is a photo of Daniel and his father. And then on the back of the photo, it says father and son. She says, he's the one that put me away. And Amanda's like, tell me that's not your dad. Laura starts convulsing on the floor, and she's going to die kind of unceremoniously. I thought they might do something better with her death. JD, what'd you think of this?
She really does just sort of, and she's dead. It's she's like, the ending to Dirty Work, and he's dead. Goodbye.
She's just like, X marks the spot. And she's gone. Like, all these deaths happen so instantaneously. You hit Abby, Laura. It's just all right, we got to get them out of here. Let's kill them all.
Well, that's the problem with having a cast this big with a story this overthought and overwritten is every character essentially is a plot device, and they serve one purpose, and her only purpose in this entire movie was X marks the spot.
Yeah.
If she was not in this movie, before right now, her character has no purpose.
So we didn't need her.
Only
well, actually,
for convenience.
She finds that little trap door, and then she just kind of falls all over the place getting weak, and then finds the X spot, and then she gone. And that's it.
Yeah.
Interesting. Chavez is on the search for everybody now. He's going to look for all the numbers. So he goes down into the basement, gets the one from Abby. Amanda finds the dead body of Jonas and tells Daniel, we have to move. Chavez goes to Laura, gets the number off the back of her neck, and then finds the photo of Daniel on the ground with Detective Matthews, and he's on the hunt for them. So we cut back to Matthews, who's now watching his son run for his life on the monitor, and he pushes past the guards and heads towards Jigsaw. Carrie tries to go and stop him, but the guards stop her and say, we tried it your way. Matthews begins to beat the living pulp out of Jigsaw here. The one part that I thought was really cool is Jigsaw kind of like holds out his hand and Matthews just grabs his finger and he's like, just breaks that thing like a Kit Kat bar.
Ooh, I had to look away for that. I could not watch that.
And then we cut back to the house. We see Addison enter the room. She sees a needle inside this glass contraption. So she puts her hand in and she's trying to grab the needle and kind of the serum pulls out of it. So she reaches in with the other hand and tries to save it. But now both her hands are stuck in this contraption. Instead of there being like rubber things, like holding her hands in, they're actually like sharp blades that are cutting up her wrist. Chavez comes in and he could have totally saved her here, but instead he just gets the number and he's like, see ya. And all we hear is her screaming and we don't actually see her die. But I think later we just find her hand hanging, if I remember right. But another character that's gone, and interesting side note, never at one point does Addison's name ever get mentioned. I only know that because it's on IMDb, but she's the only character where nobody ever actually gets her name. What did you think of this scene, though, with the razor blade knife contraption here?
It's such a frustrating scene to me because, one, it's a very well thought out trap.
Yes.
But I can't fathom being in a situation where you wouldn't approach the trap carefully.
Right.
She's just like, dum-dum-dum, coming home from work, let me just stick my fist up in this hole, and then let me stick my other fist up this other hole. Like, no, I would be so like, how Chavez is so careful, and he clears corners, and he checks. Like, they give no like amount of intelligence to other characters because they're useless and they serve no point other than she needs to die now so Chavez can look at the back of her neck. Remove her from the movie and what did we lose?
Another good point. We cut back to Matthews and Jigsaw. Jigsaw has a gun in his mouth now. Matthews pulls it out long enough for him to say, game over. I'll take you to the house. Matthews loads him up on the elevator and takes him out of the building. The rest of the cops start to give chase after him. As they're doing that, guys that came in to get the signal from the feed say, we finally got something. And they give out the address. And then Carrie kind of radios it to the SWAT team. So they start heading to that location. We cut back to Chavez, who tries to get into the room with Amanda and Daniel. And they're kind of back in that original room they started in, but they're blocking the door. Chavez screams to have them open the door. We smash to the van where Matthews is driving. And he says, where are we going? What's next? Jigsaw says, it's the last house on the left. I really like that line. Nice ode to the great original movie.
Oh, so good. So perfect.
We smash back to Daniel and Amanda, and they found a trap door underneath the safe. Daniel says, the key. You know, who had it last? Jonas had it. So he goes over to Jonas and grabs it out of his pocket, gives it to Amanda. They open the latch and go down the stairs. We have a bunch of quick cuts here back and forth where Matthews has entered the house and he's finding all the clues laying around. He's seeing the dead bodies. The SWAT team arrives at another location that they were given and they radio over the Carrie that they're in the house and she checks the monitor. She's like, I don't see you guys anywhere. Back to Amanda and Daniel. She opens up a door and enters a dark room. She clicks on the lights and they're in the bathroom from the original movie. She slams the door shut. Quick montage plays with some of the highlights from the original movie. We even see some of the bodies in there that are now deteriorating on the ground. Outside, Chavez has made it to the room where Amanda and Daniel are. We cut back to Matthews, who's finding Jonas on the ground. Back to Chavez, he says he just wants the numbers on the back of their necks. Amanda says, how will you get the number if I don't tell you what yours is? And he kind of looks around, he's trying to find a mirror. But instead, he's like, well, screw it. So he grabs a knife and he starts cutting the skin on the back of his own neck where he thinks the number might be. He eventually pulls it up and finds his number and stuffs it in his pocket, which I thought was kind of funny. He moves toward Amanda and Daniel. At this point, we think Daniel's dead because he's just laying possum. But as soon as Chavez steps to him, he shoots up, grabs the saw from the original movie, slits the throat of Chavez, who bleeds out all over the floor. We cut back to Matthews, who's made his way through the house. And Carrie, again, radios in that she can't see them. The SWAT team pulls back a cover. All the monitors are in another house. And then they pull off another cover, and it's a stack of VHS players. One of the SWAT team guys hits stop, and Carrie says, it's not live. She tells them to get out of there. We cut back to Matthews, who's made it to the bathroom, where he finds Chavez dead on the floor. The lights are out. He goes over to the bathtub, and he sees a hand sitting on the edge. So he kind of like quietly goes over there, reaches in, and as he's about to uncover, the pig man stands up, sticks a needle in his neck, and he passes out on the floor. We cut back to Carrie. The timer goes off, and the door opens to a safe inside the room where they were at, right where Jigsaw and Matthews were sitting. And Daniel's inside, safe and sound, with an oxygen mask on. Huge twist. I mean, when I watched this originally, I definitely didn't see this coming. But what do you think, JD? I mean, this is a lot to unpack here.
Yeah, the first time I watched this, I had no clue. Like, it blew my mind. Yeah. Watching it now, it just is so obvious where the twist is coming from and how badly Amanda really acts, and like she never gets sick. She like fakes cough every now and then. She's clearly in on it. Jigsaw is clearly playing and setting up Matthews. I don't know. It just, if this is your first time watching this movie, enjoy it. You'll never have this moment again.
So we cut back to Matthews, who's laying on the floor, and as he comes to, he finds a tape player, and he hits play. Let's listen to the end of the film here.
Hello, Eric. You probably don't even remember me, but you changed my life once. You sent me to prison. I was guilty of a lot of things, but not the drug charge you framed me for. You wouldn't know the things you lose when you're locked away. Second time somebody changed my life. I was guilty.
Hello, Amanda.
But my life was saved that day.
You said you survived the bridge.
Yeah. I found myself a father, a leader, a teacher.
You must meet death. In order to be reborn.
What is the cure for cancer, Eric?
Those who don't appreciate life do not deserve life.
The cure for death itself. The answer is immortality.
Daniel!
By creating a legacy, by living a life worth remembering, you become immortal. So now we find the tables are turned.
We ask for you.
What do you want?
He wants us to survive this.
I want to play a game.
You have to play by the fucking rules.
The rules are simple. What you have to do is sit here and talk to me. What? If you can do that long enough, you will find your son in a safe and secure state.
What the fuck is that?
Your son dead. Remember him, don't you?
My dad's dead. It's real hard to
miss. I call you unworthy of the life that you've been given. The knowledge of your son's impending death has caused you to forgive all these sins. What is it that we're only willing to do that when a life is dead? Don't forget the
the film ends with Amanda slamming the door shut and saying, "Game over." Matthews is chained by the ankle to one of the pipes, and then we cut to a shot outside of a smiling Jigsaw still sitting in the van. JD, what'd you think of the ending of the film?
I don't know. Again, it's hard to judge the ending of this film without comparing it to knowing what the upcoming films possess, right? Like, yeah, I know what comes. Definitely. I know a lot of what comes, so it's like, yeah, this makes sense, this adds up, but at the same time, if I'm evaluating it for what it is, when it is, and how it is, watching it in 2018, it falls flat. I didn't buy into it as much as I did the first time around.
Well, I think once you know what to look for, like you said, if it's your first time watching the movie, enjoy it, because you're never going to see it again like that. Because there isn't something new that you can pick up. The things that he talks about just become more obvious. So it's not like you pick up new clues that you didn't see the first time. You're just like, oh, well, he's fucking right there in a safe 10 feet from them.
He keeps saying safe. He's safe. He's safe.
He's safe and sound. Just like, oh, okay, well, if he's safe, what's the issue? Just sit there and talk. How boring would that movie be, though? He just sits there and talks to him, and then he pops up, and he's like, well, have a good day. Yeah. Thanks for talking.
There's your son. Take me to jail.
Can I go to the doctor now? I'm dying of cancer. Like, yeah, that'd be such a boring movie. So, with that being said, let's compare the sequel to the original. How do you feel like these two stack up against each other? Because they're both really different, in my opinion.
I agree. I think having reviewed the original last year and now reviewing the sequel 1 year later, I feel that the original holds up very well. The sequel starts to lose its grasp on what it's trying to accomplish. And next year, when we get into part three, I feel like I'm going to be a bitter miser and not like anything.
To quote Varsity Blues, I give the original 9.5 and I still got wood. This one, I don't know, 5 maybe? I didn't hate it, but I don't enjoy it because I just know what's going to happen.
Yeah, and it seems like it was directed by Nine Inch Nails. You know, like the whole time listening to the music and the quick cuts and I just...
Interesting.
I was just like, calm down. Let's talk some story.
Okay. So let's talk about next week. We're going to be back with another sequel, and it's one of our other movies in the archives. The sequel to Halloween. We're discussing Halloween 2. JD, what do you look forward to most when we get into Halloween 2?
Definitely a sequel that I think, and I hate it because when we did the teaser episode for Saw 2, I had a lot of excitement about the movie.
Yeah.
I was very positive about what we were going to see, but I think Halloween 2, it's going to be a great opportunity to take Michael Myers and bring him a step further, especially with the new Halloween movie that's coming out, which we're just, you know, we're cutting our teeth waiting for. It'll be a reminder of what was the original thought process of a Halloween sequel, and then we'll get to see what that new imagination of Halloween 40 years later is.
You know what's going to be really fun about this for me? I honestly do not know how Halloween 2 ends. I have no idea. I really don't remember this movie. And I know I've seen it probably a half a dozen times. But for whatever reason, all the random shit that my brain retains, this is not one of those things. So I'm almost going into this movie fresh. Like, I know it's in a hospital. I know Jamie Lee Curtis is in it. That's about all I remember. I'm not mad at that. I'm actually kind of excited.
You're in for a treat or a disappointment?
A trick-or-treat.
Heyo.
Hey. Make sure you guys subscribe to the podcast. Again, we are on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, YouTube. Follow us on social media. Everything is at Back in Time Pod. Tweet us. Heart us, poke us, shoot us an email, let us know what you want us to do. I did get an email or a message from one of our listeners that once had a couple good ideas for November. Maybe we can talk about that offline, but keep throwing us some ideas because I think they're good. So that's backintimepodcast@gmail.com if you want to do that. But it's that time of the episode to climb back into the DeLorean. We'll punch in today's date and return back to present day. Thanks for listening. See ya.
Amanda.